Okay, today is January 29th. It's our first day learning Sefer Yeshayahu. And we are going to start with chapter 6. And I want to spend a little time telling you why I'm starting with chapter 6. Because it's quite clear that that's really the beginning of the book. Right? Chapter 6 is... How can you ever tell what's the opening prophecy of anybody? Right? The answer is, Yeshayahu, like Yechezkel and Yirmiyahu, start their books with what looks like an appointment. Right? Okay, you can understand that before Moshe stood at the burning bush, God had not commanded him to do anything. Okay, so similar to that initiation, if you will, of Moshe, Sefer Yeshayahu has such an initiation, and it's not chapter 1, chapter 6. Okay? If you be able to show us that Shabbos?
In Shul?
This Haftorah this past week is that appointment. Okay. Alright, it fits nicely. Okay? The Torah of Atemti Udim Amleches Kodim Begoy Kadosh, where God appoints us as a holy people, connects to Yeshayahu's appointment as a Navi. He has a vision of the angels, and he says, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Fakos Melchorot Kibodot. And Yeshayahu reacts to his vision that he just saw. He thinks he's going to die, or he doesn't think he deserved to see what he saw. He didn't see it with sense data, right? Only Moshe could see actual. You know, this is sense data. It has a shape, it has a size, it has a feeling, right? Now, I must tell you that the philosophers tell us that there is nothing in this God's green earth that I can do to prove to you that I'm actually feeling this right now, holding it. It may be a dream, and dreams are very powerful, that you could dream about fighting with an angel and wake up with a sciatic torn or a dislocated hip like Yaakov. Right, you could dream of your car getting stuck on the highway, and you go over to check the cap on the radiator, and you feel heat in your hand. Hypnotists take advantage of this ability of the brain to do these things. They make you feel hot. They make you feel cold. They make you think that there's a dog on your lap. If you want to be hypnotized, there's someone very good at it. Right. So too, dreams can do that. So Yeshayahu wakes up from a dream where he sees Hashem, and he thinks that he doesn't deserve it. He thinks his people don't deserve it. And then God says, "Who wants to be my prophet? I need a Navi. Who wants to be the Navi?" Apparently, Yeshayahu in the dream must have been sitting in a room with a lot of people, right? And Yeshayahu says, "Take me. I want to be a Navi." And Hashem says, "Okay, you come up." So that's chapter 6. It looks like it's his first Navi. Okay, you accept?
So what is it discussed beforehand?
So that's the question is, what about chapter 1 through 5? And why tuck that into chapter 6? What's interesting is that in Yirmiyahu, it's chapter 1, where God tells him, you know, Yirmiyahu, I have a mission for you, I want you to go out, this is your mission statement, go out and tell the people what I want you to do. And he tells him what to expect, you know, etc., etc. Chapter 1, that's the Haftorah, actually. For Sfardim of Moshe at the burning bush, connected to Yirmiyahu's initiation, if you will. Got it? Okay, so that's chapter 1 of Yirmiyahu. Interestingly, when Yechezkel also gets an initiation, where Hashem tells him, this is your first prophecy, I want you to write it down on a parchment with ink, and then he tells him to eat the parchment, let it go down inside you and internalize what I want you to do. And he describes it. So that's also, it's clearly Yechezkel's first vision. But that's chapter 3. What's going on here? Right? It's fascinating because Yirmiyahu is famously, we're not learning Yirmiyahu this year, but I just want you to know, Yirmiyahu is famously out of order. It's obvious. It's obvious. It's so out of order. He describes the Chorban, right, in the mid-30s, and then... Twice he goes out of order to describe events taking place 20, 30 years before the Chorban. He describes events 10 years after the Chorban. And then he describes one of the first kings he spoke to in the next chapter. The reader can't help but see that the book is purposely out of order, and it's left that way in order to show that during the Churban, which is when he's writing, it was very hard to keep records.
It doesn't make sense at the end, or when, as you're going through it and learning it.
You feel this is supposed to be out of order. Life was out of order then. It's a sort of a literary tactic. There are some books out there that try to chronologically order Yirmiyahu. It's wrong. It's wrong. I don't like it. I saw it. It's cute. It's probably a good assignment. It's a good homework assignment to go chapter by chapter, and you know, you look, line up the five kings, because sometimes he tells you in the first year of the reign, what's this doing here? This is 20 years before the chapter before it. Right? So, okay, it's called Ein Mukdam Mu'achar B'Torah. You're familiar with that concept, right? It's a few times in the Torah. The Torah is incontrovertibly, you know, chapter 1 of Bamidbar is the second month. Chapter 9 of Bamidbar is the first month. Chapter 9 is before chapter 1. Ein Mukdam Mu'achar B'Torah. Fine. There's some commentaries like Ibn Ezra who use that concept all over the Torah. Torah is not meant to be an historical guide in chronological order. Torah is a moral guide. Remember that. Okay. So the irony is that of the three prophets, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, who all talk about their initiation, the only one whose initiation is actually chapter 1 is the one that's the entire book is really out of order. Okay. So Yeshayahu puts chapter... I'm not going to deal with Yechezkel today. But if I'm going to contend to you, it's not universal, but most commentaries feel that chapter 6 is the beginning of the book. Question is, why? Why not put chapter 6 in the beginning of the book and then move on 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7? Okay? Right? It's a legitimate question. And the short answer I'm going to give you right now, and we'll not be able to really appreciate it until we see the parak inside. The short answer right now is going to be that his opening prophecy in the book is so profoundly devastating that Barbanel says that he couldn't open the book with this devastating prophecy. Now wait a second. What's a devastating prophecy? Yirmiyahu has prophecies of parents eating the flesh of their children. Yirmiyahu has prophecies of children being tossed alive for food for animals. Yirmiyahu has prophecies describing the most lurid, awful predictions of what was under the Babylonians. What could be such an awful prophecy that the Tanakh doesn't want to start chapter 1 of Yeshayahu with this prophecy? Okay. Let's open up chapter 6 and hopefully get up to it. If not, we'll get there after. So you're looking at the Das Mikra now. You don't have the traditional Mikros Gedolos there, but in the notes he sometimes brings down some of the portion. And we start Bishnas Mos HaMelech Uziyah. Got it? Okay. Now, what I do have to do is give you a little bit of historical background. Okay? I'm going to put you about the year 750 BCE. Okay? Context, the temple is going to be destroyed approximately 170 years from now. Okay? There are two kingdoms in Israel. The northern kingdom comprising 10 tribes, the southern kingdom comprising 2 tribes. That's a convenient delineation. There are plenty of you people from Yehuda who live here, and there are plenty of people from these tribes that live down there. But that's the general delineation. Okay? The two tribes down there are Yehuda and Benjamin, and the other 10 are there. This has been the situation for the last 250 years. You know that, right? The kingdom was split, and there were two different kings. The northern kingdom is usually called Israel. The southern kingdom is usually called Yehuda. The two kingdoms were often at odds. They fought. They fought battles. They killed, right? They took one battle where Israel takes 210,000 Yehuda prisoners of war and only convinced to set them free by the prophet, right? They did not get along so well. Okay, put that aside for right now. There's two kingdoms, and I want you to know, just be aware of the names of these kings. Uzziahu, Yotam, Ahaz, Hezekiah. Okay, these are the names of the kings you must know. Okay, they're ruling from 750, really to the end of Uzziahu's, because look at this pasuk starts.
Right.
Like he died. So Uzziah was dying. Uzziah ruled for 52 years. So that's a long time for a king, because usually you don't become king until you're a little older. 52 years is a long time. Right? So, but we're not even sure what this means, the year that Uzziah died. We'll see why. Why is there any doubt what that even means? Okay, we'll see shortly. So you gotta know these four guys. Okay? He rules 52 years, he rules 16, 16, and he rules 31. Okay? I'm giving you just an approximation, approximately 750, that's where we are right now. Okay? The geopolitical situation surrounding Israel, for at least for us right now in chapter 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, are going to be, you should know about two other nations. One is Aram, which is today Syria. That's a border nation, so we care a lot more about Syria than Iran, although now it's one and the same, because Syria is right on our border. Right? Iran can send a missile, we have a little more time to figure out what to do with that. That Iran in Iraq, which is much bigger, further to the north, at that time was called Ashur. Translated as Assyria. Okay? You with me? These two nations are traditional enemies, right? But Ashur is a sort of a new kid on the block. But as you know from history, it doesn't take a lot of time for a nation to just start being a new kid and just taking over everybody. Right? I think Germany in the 30s, right? So they're conquering nation after nation. Okay? And Aram, you know, that's expedience, makes a peace pact with the northern tribes to just try to broaden our scope of how we can protect ourselves against Ashur. From us, that's a pretty probably a smart idea, because it's another buffer before they get down here. You with me?
Yeah, were there a lot of like, people like...
Think of Risk, if you play Risk.
Was it a lot of citizens? Was it like considered a large nation? Like
millions.
Okay, so it was considered larger.
Yeah, for that time. Okay. 210,000 were taken. David commanded an army of over 1 million soldiers. 1,100,000 soldiers were counted at the end of Shmuel Bet, and that's 500 years ago. Right? And there was not a lot of... So I wouldn't think a lot of assimilation, but there was not many wars where they were being killed off. So those numbers are jumping, I'd imagine. Right? Okay, they want Yehuda to join them to make as large a coalition as possible against the encroachments of Ashur. Okay, it's simple to understand. That is the geopolitical situation going on right now. Okay. And it's already been going on in the northern kingdom that these two prophets, they both precede Yeshayahu, Hoshea and Amos. Do you recognize the names? Haftorah Bamidbar, Haftorah Vayeshev, and Kedoshim. Hoshea and Amos, Haftorah Vayetzev, if you remember, Haftorah Shabbos Shuvah comes from Hoshea. Mm-hmm. So these two prophets have been threatening the northern kingdom. You are turning against God. God has forgiven a lot of bad behavior, but the turning against God is taking on a terrible social disorder and decay. Widows and orphans are being abused. Full disclosure, the northern kingdom was doing very well then. The Israel, at this point, that Yeshayahu starts giving prophecy, the land of Israel encroached on more territory than ever before in our history, and certainly ever since. They controlled some of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. So broad did they were their military successes. Right? What often happens with success is you turn, you know, right? God must be very satisfied with what we're how we're behaving. Ram Lababacha, Vishakh is Hashem. Right? You forget God. Vaishman Yishurun Vayivot. You get fat, you kick. Right? So these prophets have been threatening Israel, and Yeshayahu and Micha after him, they share some prophecies. Yeshayahu and Micha speak similarly to the southern kingdoms. Okay? So the year of the death of Uzziyahu is something we can probably, you know, pretty easily determine. I have all this this information. I'm just to get you whet your appetite on what you're going to be doing. I'm going to be making copies for you of materials, maps, and especially calendars and, you know, year timelines. All right. Okay. So the thing about Uzziyahu, he was generally a good king. But he was also very successful in conquests, right? Even Uzziyahu Migdalim Yerushalayim Bechazkeim. There's a very famous song about him in the 60s in Israel, about, you know, after the Six Day War, that they were acting like Uzziyahu. And he became haughty also. What did he want to do? He wanted to be a kohen. He went into the temple to bring korbanos, and they begged him. This is all in the Tanakh. They begged him, Uzziyahu, you're a king, you're Yehuda. Leave the kohanim to do. He goes, no! No one will tell me what to do! I don't want to bring the Torahs, I want to offer Korbanos. And listen, the Torah is a moral, the Tanakh is a moral code. Something awful happened to him. He became leprous. His face became covered with leprosy when he went to bring the Torahs. And a significant historical event, weather event, took place that is recorded in all ancient texts, because you know that there's a fault line coming up from Africa straight through Israel, all the way up into Iran. There was a devastating earthquake in the year 762. Amos predicts this earthquake. It coincides with what Uzziyahu did. Did Uzziyahu cause the earthquake? Look, God has his plan. God knows what's happening. But the Divrei Yamim describes he became leprous, and there was an earthquake. You don't have Targum there, but I do. The Targum on the pasuk Bishnas Mos Hamelech Uzziyahu. All right, I'll tell you what the Targum says. It says Bishata Deit Naga Uzziyahu. They say it wasn't the year he died. It was the year he offered the incense and became leprous. You ever hear Mitzorah Chashuv Kemeis? What happens to your skin if you're a Mitzorah is that the skin dies on you. And it peels off. If it just disappears. Right? Remember Moshe when he was praying for Miriam, who was leprous? He said, Al no tihi kameis. Don't let her be like a dead person. That's how we learn that a Mitzorah is like dead. So when it says that Uzziyahu became leprous, Yeshayahu refers to this as if though he died. Of course, it's a big difference. He didn't actually die till 16 years later. But when he was stricken with leprosy, his son Yosam served as king. Okay? All right. Enough of that. Okay, so let's read the text. Bishnas Mos Hamelech Uzziyahu Ve'ereh Es Adonai Yoshev Al Kiseirom V'Nisah. Wait, didn't God tell Moshe, no man can see me and live? So how does he say, I see God? I gave the answer about 15 minutes ago.
It was in a dream.
I've never met a Jew who has seen God in a dream. You know why? I've met many Christians who see God in dreams. What's the difference? Why don't we ever see God in a dream? Come on, it's obvious.
You just can't.
We can.
God is a person?
Because their God was a person. They believe that they have a picture on their wall of the one they worship. They wear him around the neck. They see him in church. They see. They have movies about it.
So it's just in their consciousness?
Right?
So
it's in their consciousness, of course. You dream about what's in your mind. We don't dream about that because it's not in our mind. Simple. If Yeshayahu is actually receiving a prophecy from outside, that's what a prophecy is. God put it in his mind. Will I say maybe tonight you'll dream about God? Doubt. Right? Are you going to dream about an elephant flying through the eye of a needle? Doubtful. Right? Yeah, well, there's a story like that in the Gemara. The guy was obsessed about it all day. It was a stupid thing. He was thought about it all day. He dreamed about it. But it's not part of our consciousness. So it's not going to show up in a dream. Right? So when Yeshayahu sees it with all the glory and all that it is, but it's not real sense data. Only Moshe actually saw real sense data. You know what I mean by that? Like a real bush on fire. Was God in the bush? That's what it says in the Pasuk. All right, but what God did tell Moshe, no man can see me and live. Moshe got to see God's back. That means a lot of different things philosophically and in reality that we'll deal with another time. Okay? But Yeshayahu, by seeing Hashem Yoshev al Kisei Ram v'Nisa, that's in our liturgy, right? Shochanan Ram v'Kadosh Shemo, right? That also comes from Yeshayahu. Vishulav Mileim is Sahichol. Now, of course, this is what we call anthropomorphic. What do I mean by that? Anthra, human, like man. Pomorphic. He's going to give morph, meaning like a bodily form, right? Anthropology, anthropomorphic means applying to God physical features. Get it? When we apply to God emotional features, that's called anthropopathic. This is anthropomorphic. Got it? So anthropomorphic means on the hem of God's cloak was. God doesn't have a cloak. God doesn't have a body for a cloak to be worn on, right? Okay. He describes the events that he sees before him as sraphim. Right? That's an English word now. Seraph. There's a type of angels. They're called seraphim because they burn up under certain circumstances. Right? Seraphim omdim mima'al lo. Of course, this continues to be anthropomorphic. How can you be above God? God is all space, time, and dimension. God is all existence. Eheya asher eheya. That's the pshat. What those words mean, what God told Moshe at the burning bush. Right? So how can you be above God? Alright, but again, it's anthropomorphic because it's in his vision. Right? He saw something that he understood in his dream represents God. Right? Right? Let's say your bed is on fire and you smell the smoke and your brain gets the message that there's smoke here. Will God come to me in the vision and say, "Get up, your bed is on fire"? See, when you smell something, when you hear something, it sometimes gets into your dream, right? Mm-hmm. Right, like an ambulance outside or something, a siren or something, or a train going by or something like that. So you smell the smoke and it gets into your dream. Who's the one who tells you get out of bed? It could be your parents, it could be, you know, right? My father claims that, you know, he said, remembers, you know, that when he was hiding, he escaped from his ghetto, which was very, very dangerous and very rare. But he was never caught. And that one time when he found a barn to sleep in overnight, that his mother came to him in a dream and said, "This is dangerous here, get out." And he left it, and then he found out that the barn was raided over that night, later that night. There were actually other people in the barn. They were all killed, right on the spot. Right? His mother had already been killed. Right? But she said, I'm Pleufin. Right? Find a warm place to sleep, you take advantage of that. Right?
I guess something like that. You can't, like, ignore it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, but you know what? There are a lot of Mefarshim do things with these details of how many angels, how many wings they have. I'm skipping over this. It's beyond this. It's a big, you know, the Kabbalah that the Zohar is based on is this description. and Yechezkel's description, and they make up Kedusha. Yechezkel describes even a much greater length than this, what his angels look like. That's known as Maase Merkava. Are you familiar with that? The mystical, metaphysical secrets of our existence, right? Gemara in the second paragraph of Chagiga says you shouldn't learn those things except in very small groups. No, maybe, but I have other fish to fry than to figure out what these things mean. Okay? Gemara in Chagiga says that Yechezkel and Yeshayahu saw the same things, but Yechezkel made a bigger deal about it because he lived in the village where he hardly ever saw the king. Yeshayahu lived in the city. This was a more common vision for him, so he doesn't make as big a deal about it. But they do comprise Kedusha. When Yechezkel sees it, he says, Baruch Kibbol Hashem in Komo. When Yeshayahu sees it, he says, Kadosh, 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 Hashem, Tzvokos, Malav, Olaritz, Kibbodo. And that's about to be here. He looks at them, and he sees the angels, the wings. Again, the angels are six wings, two at the top, two in the middle, and two at the bottom. I'm skipping over what these represent. They do represent a lot of things in Kabbalah, right? The Karazel Zevi Amar, Kadosh, 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 Hashem, Tzokos, Malach, Olaritz, Kibbodo. They call to one another because they can't do it, they can't sing their Shira, which is Kadosh, 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 by themselves. It's too dangerous. They may burn up. They have to have the strength in numbers. This is why we should say Kedusha together. Right? Okay, Rashi here says that when the Shlich Tzibur is saying Kedusha, he should say the words Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh together with everybody else. Because the angels can't say it themselves, why should we? Right? That the Kedusha that needs a minion, don't wait. I know there are some other poskim that say, well, you have to say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh yourself for the sake of people who are maybe staying in the middle of the Shmon Esra and they want to listen to you, Shmei Ka'onim. I'm not going to get into all those halachic aspects. Right? The angels cannot say this Shira alone. Just parenthetically, this in Shmos Rabbah, it says this is how we know the angels didn't sing Shira when the Egyptians were drowning. Because it says there, below Karav Ze El Ze Kol Alayla. The angels didn't get close because God said, don't sing Shira until this whole story is over. Right? There's a lot to talk about many of these things, but I want to get to our point. So it says, Vayanu Amos HaSipim, we call HaKore. Amos HaSipim are these. The hinges of my door came loose. What could cause the hinges of your door to come loose?
Another person?
Come on. What happened this year? This is the year that Uzziah died. It's an earthquake. Right? And I was awakened by the earthquake. Right? We call HaKorei, something called out. My house was filled with smoke. Steam. Alright, so that could be the physical effects of the earthquake. And he woke up. He's not in his dream anymore. But Omar, oily ki nit mesi ki isht meis v'sayim anochi. Oh my goodness, what did I just see? I'm not worthy of this. I'm a man of impure lips, God. My foibles and my weaknesses, speaking like Moshe at the burning bush, right? That he says, Uvetoch am tmeis fosayim anochi yoshev. And I'm also residing amongst the people of impure lips. Oh. We'll mention the people. We have to talk about the people. Just talk about why you feel you don't deserve it. By the way, Rashi in his Perush to the Torah actually puts similar words in Moshe's mouth. Because when God tells him, I want you to take my people out of Israel, out of Egypt, Moshe's initial response was, Mi anochi ki elecha paro b'chiyotzias b'nei Yisrael b'eretz Mitzrayim? Who am I to go to Parpetz Minah? I don't deserve this, God. I'm not worthy. And then Rashi says, what he meant by b'chiyotzias b'nei Yisrael b'eretz Mitzrayim, he says, I don't think the people deserve to be redeemed. Rashi put it, because Moshe had to flee because of that. Remember? You stop the fight, and you said that they picked on them, right? Okay, so
that is Yeshayahu, according to what we're about to see in the Mefarshim, Rashi, Gemara, Yeshayahu sinned in speaking this way. Okay, You want to say that you don't deserve to see such a vision because you are of impure lips. Keep an Israel out of it. Fair enough. Okay. Ki es Hashem, HaMelech Hashem Tzvakos, Rabbi Nai.
I saw God himself in this vision. V'yofel ayachom min asrofim v'yondo mitzvah.
One of the fiery angels came over to me, and his hand was a ritzpah, is a tongs. You have a fireplace in your house? Tongs, where you move the coals around, right? The melkochayim bekach me'el mizbeach, and melkochayim is the tongs. And he picked up one of the coals from the mizbeach. The ritzpah is the coal. Right? You burn a lot of wood on the mizbeach, it turns to black coal. He took one of those coals from the Mizbeach, which was, must have been in my dream also. Now the question in the Meforshim is this reality what we're about to read, or is this still part of his dream? It really appears to be part of his dream. He's saying all this in his dream. Why are you being judged on what you say in your dream? You're not really in charge of everything you're saying in your dream. You know what I'm saying? If you kill someone you like or someone you love in your dream, does that mean that you have to be judged for that? You have to feel bad for that? It's my dream. What do you want? You may want to talk to someone about why that happened and maybe say what's called Hatavas Chalom, right? You know what I'm saying? Hatavas Chalom means you go through a Beis Din of three and then they say certain psukim. Look in the Siddurim habit. I've done it many times for people. I've never done it for myself, but I've done it for a lot of different people. So what did the angel do with that coal? Vayaga alpi, he touched my mouth with it. Vayomer hine nogaze al svasecha v'sar v'necha v'chatascha tefupar. I have touched your lips with this coal. Now your sin has departed from you, and your guilt is no longer. What guilt? Rashi says, the guilt of speaking against your people this way. I don't need a prophet to badmouth my people. This is your job. You put the people's case before me, and you put my case before the people. Don't mess up again like this. This is your chance. Now go out there. Okay, got it? According to Rashi, the sin and the guilt that is being removed from Yeshayahu was the guilt of saying this last line. Got it? Now, I go back to Yirmiyahu for a moment. Okay? Yirmiyahu's opening prophecy was God appointing him to go to the people and gives him his mission. Yirmiyahu's line was, Hoy Hashem, aho, lo yadati daber ki na'ar roch. I'm just a youth. I don't know how to speak. They're going to kill me. So Hashem says, don't say that. I'm going to put my words in your mouth and you're going to be a good spokesman for me. And then he says, to God himself, touch him on his mouth. Exact same words. Vayaga alfi. Not with a call. Just a direct touch. But exactly the same words. Vayaga alfi. God touched my mouth and said, I have put my words in your mouth. Now you will speak. But notice that it doesn't say you have been cleansed of your guilt and your sin has been atoned. So according to Rashi, no, why not? Why?
The extra line.
What?
The line of talking back.
Right. Yirmiyahu didn't say I'm amongst an impure people. So Yirmiyahu didn't have that sin to be atoned. You with me, right? Obvious. Yeshayahu said, oh, I'm amongst the impure people. So God had to touch his mouth to initiate him and say, now I've, with hot coal, now I have cleansed your mouth with this heat. It's part of the dream, so I don't believe that God, an angel in reality, to put a coal by his mouth. Plus, only Moshe sees angels. Other people don't see angels. Okay? So this is still part of his dream. So he's cleansed. Yirmiyahu doesn't have to be cleansed in such a way because he didn't sin by saying my people are impure, right? Okay, according to Rashi, why was Moshe's mouth cleansed by saying what do my people deserve to be saved, right? Rather, I would prefer a whole different approach to why Yirmiyahu was not told about a sin, but Yeshayahu was. So told the holy, Yeshayahu was older.
He's in his 20s. He's 30s. He's out there. He's been, by the time you're 30, you need some guilt, something behind you. Because let me tell you something. While you may not mind going to a car mechanic who drives a terrible car, or you don't mind going to Chas V'Shalom if you need a heart specialist who smokes and eats pastrami sandwiches and is 100 pounds overweight, and you may not mind going to a marriage therapist who's married himself 6 times, right? I know such people in all 3 cases, right? As long as they have good advice for me, who cares if he doesn't take the advice himself, right? If he's a magic with a scalpel and heart surgery, I don't care if he himself has a bad heart, right? But no one wants to hear mussar from a person who doesn't exemplify a moral lifestyle. Agree?
Right?
So, Yeshayahu, you're older. You've been around the block a little. I need to cleanse you of what you might have done. Yirmiyahu is a kid, 16, 17, he's innocent. Right? While it's true that at 16 he could have done some bad things already, but he didn't need to be cleansed the way Yeshayahu did. Otherwise, you have to wonder. The same exact words are used to describe the initiation of these prophets, by Yaga Alpi, touched my mouth. Why only by Yeshayahu does it say, now your sin has been departed from you? And Yirmiyahu it doesn't say. I just gave you 2 reasons, right? One, according to Rashi, because Yirmiyahu did not badmouth the people like Yeshayahu just did. And 2, the age difference. Got it? You with me? Let's go back. V'eshma es kol Hashem, pasuk ches. I listen to the voice of God. Omer es mi eshlach u mi yelech lam. Who should I send? Who's going to go out and do this mission? V'omar, hini shlachini, God, send me. I'm here. Look me. I'm back here. Send me. Go. Go and tell these people. This is the opening, devastating prophecy I submit to you. What? Can you forgive Yeshayahu for wondering? Wait. Say this again, God. Listen, but don't understand. See, but don't know. Hashmein lev ha'om hazeh ve'oznav achbeid. Fatten their hearts and harden their ears. Pen yirebe einav v'oznav yishmo levavo yavin v'shavu afalo, lest they pay heed and heal themselves. This is unique in Kol HaTanach. What kind of mission is this? Isn't the prophet's mission, I just said, to place God's case before the people, make them better? Stop oppressing those widows and orphans. Stop oppressing the poor. Right? Generally, the prophets, Sheyu Yirmiyahu Yechezkel, spoke 80% Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. To be sure, it's not limited to that. They did speak about Shabbos and things like that. But most of their call was about social disorder. Right? So what is Hashem telling Yeshayahu in his opening prophecy? Harden their hearts? Does this make sense? What kind of prophecy is this? It's unique in Kol HaTanach that God tells the prophet to tell the people, go into the casinos, go, please, enjoy yourself. Who's saying such a thing? Harden their hearts? What is this, Paro? These are your people, God. So Yeshayahu asks, Vayomer, Vaomar, Ad Mosai Adonai. How long will this last? He doesn't mean how long should I harden their hearts. He means, how long will they not listen to you? Vayomer ad asher yishau arim me'ein yoshev uvatim me'ein adam ve'adamah tishaeh shmamah. They need this punishment now. Richak Hashem es adam v'rabah hazuv v'kerev haaretz. People will be cast aside. Od ba'asiriya v'shalav ha'isadah v'er ka'el v'chalon asher v'shalach es matzev es bamzer ha'kodesh v'tzavta. A tenth of them, either only a tenth will return, or a tenth will be lost. To lose a tenth of a people is called to decimate. To decimate. Decimate means one tenth. He implies that only 10% will return, a sign that something like a tenth of the people will be scattered soon.
right? I want to give you as an example of what Hashem is telling Yeshayahu to do here. And it's nonetheless devastating. Do you remember the first time you got the car? You drive, both of you? Mm-hmm. You still remember? I remember the first time I got the car. It's 40 years ago. More.
There's some friends that paid a shiva call from the Lower East Side. And the guy I paid a shiva call to, I still know him. That was in my shoulder. It was months he comes in my shoulder for the early minute. And I remember you got certain rules, right? How many people can get into the car, what time you have to be home, what you have to be in the drive, right? Obviously no impediments, no drinking. Right? You got certain rules, no?
Yeah.
Okay. So the father says, listen, I know you got to have the car back by 10 o'clock.
I want you, not more than three other friends in the car. Right? Goes without saying, no drinking, no smoking or anything in the car. No texting, no
distracted driving. So what happens? The father's waiting up for him. He comes in at 12:45 with six kids getting out of the car. And the car, like, you know, swerves into the garage. And his father can see through the window that he's talking on the phone.
The kid runs up to his room. He sees everyone sleeping. Gets in there. Bang. What Yirmiyahu calls Meshuva Nitzachas. He rebelled and he's successful. He succeeded in getting into his room. His father comes in, knocks on the door Sunday morning and says, so son, what time did you get in last night? He goes, Dad, I got in at, I'm sorry, about 10:15, but I saw everyone was sleeping, so I'm sorry I missed the deadline by a little bit. Because you think I wasn't waiting for you? You don't think I saw the way you drove into the garage? Almost 3 hours late? You didn't keep any of the rules I set for you. Son, I just want you to be careful next time, all right? I remember the first time I got the car also. I also missed on a few things, but next time, you know, you got caught, be careful, right? Wow, that kid loves his father. He comes to school Monday morning, he says, my father's the coolest dude in the world. He understands me, right? No. Father B, son, you see these car keys? You're not looking at them for 6 months. And when you get home from school for the next month, you're staying in your room, right? A car is a great responsibility. Right? I'm not your friend, I'm your father. Okay? That son goes to school on Monday. Oh, my father is the meanest. He is such a nerd. He doesn't get us. He doesn't get it with a bit to be a teenager. You think he remembers being a teenager? Right? Okay, guess what? It's next time Father A's kid gets the keys, he's going to blow a stop sign and kill all seven people in the car. Right? Hashem doesn't want to be our friend. Hashem says, Yeshayahu, I've had enough for 400 years. These people need to suffer now. Because I've been a sucker. Hashem is the biggest sucker in Tanakh. I've been a sucker for them. I'm a friar. They keep taking advantage of me. They know how much I love them. They know how much I want to keep forgiving them. But this time, with Ashur rising, right? Ashur's strength. They will only survive that if I get involved like I got involved with Paro. And you know what? I can. I can blow my nose at Ashur and blow them off the map. Give them a couple of tsunamis and a couple of earthquakes. But I won't, because they don't deserve it. And my people don't deserve it. I'm going to let Ashur do whatever they're ready to do. And I'm scooting out of here. Like he did in 1933. And I'm standing aside. And I'm saying, this is what you want? You want a world without God? Excellent. I saw a t-shirt that someone was wearing. It said, Dear God, how did you let that happen in some kind of school where there was a shooting? Right? The answer from God, dear student, they don't let me in the schools. Right? You know, the schools where they say prayer and they use the kid says, God bless you, or the microphone, but they'll discipline him or something like that. So it was a valedictorian in one of the schools who they warned him, if you say anything about God in your speech, we'll pull you off of the dais. So what he had was about 30 of his friends sneeze at the same time. And then he quote in his microphone, he says, oh, God bless you.
In the
album? I'm not sure. They learned afterwards and they just publicized it. They say, So you want me out of the world? You want to go about oppressing your orphans and widows without my input? So Hashem tells Yeshayahu, who hardened their hearts. I don't want them listening right now. They have to have the card taken away. I would submit to you that that's more devastating than the prophecy that talks about children being strewn out in the fields for the vultures. We can fix that. But for God to say, I don't want them turning around because I don't want to forgive them again. How could that be chapter one of any book?
Okay. So how is he going to? I mean, was God just hardening the hearts of the Jews, or
no? It means you're my prophet now. That's right now. There has to be some kind of takeaway right now, because I think it's going to be worse for them if I don't take away the car. So the car being the land of Israel.
So being, is it Yirmiyah who's the prophet again? The Navi?
Our Navi is Yeshayah.
So Yeshayah, he has to. So what is his role in hardening the heart?
I think it's don't try to soften them. Let them do what they are.
So just let them be for now.
I'll tell you when I want you to go out and render a message.
He's just being like,
leave it right now.
I'm going to use you later on.
I want you at the door. I want you ready.
Okay.
You're initiated. When I'm ready, I'll tell you. Right now, there has to be some. The car has to be taken away. That, according to Bravanel, is so devastating that you can't have that as chapter one. All right? Now, I have an assignment for you. The assignment is that just read the English. Okay? I want you to read chapter 5 to chapter 10 in English. It'll take you less than 5 minutes. Prove to me from, you have to read carefully. Prove to me from something between chapter 5 and 10. By 10 it's over. Prove to me from something in chapter 5 and 10 that chapter 6 was inserted. Okay? In other words, my contention is that it's chapter...